You're listening to The Leonard LoPate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You may think the latest revelations of corruption in New Jersey are as bad as it can get, but actually they face stiff competition from some of the state's past scandals, including a few stories and schemes that may seem too strange to be true. Here to explain how and why this reflects a larger pattern is Bob Engle, the Trenton bureau chief for the Gannett newspapers. He has written a book with Sandy McClure called The Soprano State, New Jersey's Culture of Corruption. It's published by St. Martin's Griffin. I'm very pleased to welcome Bob Engle to our show today. Hello.
Thank you. Good to be here on this, the fifth anniversary of Jim McGreevy saying that he's going to be leaving the governor's office. I'm not sure what the fifth anniversary is. I'll have to look that up.
Well, I don't remember how long ago he was on our show, so was his wife. So we've talked a bit about Jim McGreevy and what happened there, but your book is filled with similar stories. How long have you been following corruption in New Jersey?
Well, as long as I've been in the state, which is about 15 years. I'm not a native. I came here from California, and almost immediately I realized I wasn't in California anymore.
Well, this is nonfiction, right? Because there were times when I found some of the stories kind of hard to believe.
Well, interesting you should say that. The people in California love the book because they think it's the funniest book they've read all year. The people in New Jersey read The Soprano State and they think it's funny until they get about halfway through, and then they realize that they're paying for this three-ring circus. And in fact, when St. Martin's Press got the manuscript to The Soprano State, one of their first reactions was, people are not going to believe this. They're going to think that you're making it up, which is why for a while the marketing slogan was, it's real, but it reads like fiction. And you were talking about historically, they're getting ready to do, in fact, it's in production now, The Soprano State, the movie. It's a documentary, and they wanted to see if they could find out the first corruption in New Jersey. So they went about looking, and one of the things that they found was, back during the Revolutionary War days, when General Washington had to come across the Delaware with his ragtag army, the people of New Jersey wanted to charge them tolls to go on New Jersey roads when they were trying to win our freedom from Britain.
So the first Jersey Turnpike tolls.
Yeah, exactly.
And he didn't have Easy Pass either.
Well, you know, and up until McGreevy, the Easy Pass we had didn't work, but they didn't have it. And in fact, George Washington was so angry at the way the revolutionary soldiers were treated, he wrote this scathing letter to the then governor of New Jersey about it. And hey, you know, we're trying to win a revolution here, and you're trying to collect tolls from us. And I think, you know, how typical. This hasn't changed, has it?
Well, is this just New Jersey? Because this the scandal that we're the most recent one, which you've included in your book, which you've updated, does have a Brooklyn connection as well.
Right.
Is this an Eastern problem, or is New Jersey a particularly bad example, and sometimes it just spills over to neighbors?
It's a question that we get all the time when we're out doing book signings, particularly out of state. But it used to be in the old days when I was growing up, I grew up in Atlanta, that they said that Louisiana, Illinois, Rhode Island, New Jersey were the most corrupt of states. And I think that probably today, I think that we can say that we're number one, because none of those other states have ever had three blue buses arrive with people who have been arrested. I think that there is more corruption in New Jersey, and I think that's because we really have a culture of corruption in this state. That's why we subtitled it The Culture of Corruption, because for whatever reason, and it could be it started way back in Washington's day or maybe before that, it is more tolerated here than any state that I've ever lived in.
Although, according to the latest polls, people are rather upset, finally.
Well, finally.
93% of New Jersey voters say government corruption is somewhat serious or very serious problem. 65% say that the recent wave of corruption arrests embarrasses them as New Jersey residents. We're talking about 44 people arrested on July 23rd, including three mayors, two state assemblymen, five rabbis. This almost sounds like, at least in the sale of the human body parts, like something Elmore Leonard might have invented.
Well, you know, when when I was first told that that was coming down, which was very, very early in the morning on the day it happened, they were going over this what you just said. And he got to the body parts part, and I said, body parts? That's weird even for New Jersey. But I think that is what got the as I said, I've been dealing with this stuff for like 15 years, and including the McGreevy thing, of course. And what was different about this latest roundup was the international attention and the national attention that it had. I was interviewed by press and broadcast in foreign countries. And it's like all of a sudden they discovered we're here. But I think the people of New Jersey, and it's reflected in that poll, have suddenly realized, yeah, it's funny if you don't live here. However, it's costing us a lot of money, and it really is making us an international laughing stock. And I think that's a good thing. They finally realize that.
At the center of it all is a man named Solomon Dweck, but he's not a New Jerseyite, is he?
Well, he lives here. His father is a rabbi in a synagogue. I believe it's in Deal, but he had his own problems last year, I guess it was. He drove through the drive-thru in a bank and gave them a check for $25 million. And they deposited it.
In a drive-thru, he gave them $25
million? Now, that's the reaction that we get when we tell these stories. You think you misheard me. No, he drove through with a $25 million check in a bank at a drive-thru.
I think I would have talked to the manager with that kind of check.
And they deposited it, and before they could figure out what was going on, which was there was no money to back the $25 million, he had already transferred some of the $25 million out. So they nailed him on bank corruption charges. And every time I think about that story, I think about if I happen to go to a bank that isn't my bank and I try to cash a check for $50, they want 10 pieces of ID. But somehow he got through with $25 million, and then when they caught up to him, they offered him the opportunity to work with the FBI. Now, the interesting thing about that was his picture had been in the paper, his name had been in the paper, everybody was talking about that, and even so, these people were still willing, allegedly, to take bribes from this guy.
So they, without ever thinking, well, gee, this might be a setup. The guys who was arrested was found dead. Jack Shaw. Has a cause of death been determined yet?
Well, I haven't, and I just got back into town last night myself, and I haven't seen. I don't believe it has. I think the toxicology reports and all of that are still out. But he had been in failing health. There were a lot of prescription medicine vials around there, and the last time I talked to the authorities about it, they didn't think that there was foul play involved. They didn't think it was a homicide or anything like that. Somebody, you know, can accidentally over-medicate themselves, or it could be they medicated themselves on purpose, but I don't believe that has been determined yet.
Now, three mayors and two state assemblymen seems like a big haul, but haven't the corruption cases in the past even gone as high as governors? It's not just Newark mayors and Jersey City mayors in the past.
Jersey City has a long, long history of being involved in corruption, going back to the Hague days. And this guy, you could make an argument that the kind of things that that guy did would make what we're doing today, you know, look like Sunday school. It has gone back a long way, and there was of course Jim McGreevy 5 years ago today announced to the world that he was stepping down, and he said it was because of this affair that he allegedly was having with this foreigner that he named head of Homeland Security, who of course couldn't even get a security check, much less be
Golan Sapel.
Golan Sapel. But in the Soprano state, we talk about the other things that was going on at the same time. And Sandy McClure and I, we don't really believe the reason he said he was leaving is the reason that he was leaving. We think he was in trouble over other things.
Well, how far back do you have to go before you find a governor who was not part of a scandal or who didn't have aides who were part of a scandal?
Well, I don't know about that. Almost everybody we looked at. There was, if it not the government himself, governor himself, there was some sort of controversial thing that happened during the administration involving AIDS or something, which, of course, I mean, you can go to almost any state and you can find something like that happening. We certainly don't have the edge on that. We seem to have the edge on the how big it is. I mean, how spectacular it is.
But also on reformers who then got caught up in these kinds of scandals. One of the mayors caught in this recent one ran on an anti-corruption platform. And you talk about Jim Florio. Didn't he make his political career in opposition to the corrupt Democratic Party machine that was headed by Angelo Arricchetti in
right.
Camden County?
Yes. You're absolutely right. He did. That was part of the and he was nailed in the AB scam. Situation where the FBI were pretending to be Arab people handing out bribes. Running on an anti-crime or pro-ethics platform is not unusual in New Jersey. The current governor, John Corzine, he ran as an outsider, and he said that he was going to change the way that New Jersey does business and something about the toxic mix of money and politics. And then when he got elected, he repeated that in his inaugural address, and we were thinking, yes, he's going to carry through with it. And out in the lobby of the building and where he gave that address, there were two senators and who were asked about what they thought about the address. And they basically said, who is this guy to come in here and tell us how to run our business? One of them was Sharp James, former senator, former mayor of Newark, current felon behind bars. The other one was Wayne Bryant, former senator, convicted felon on the way to prison. But for whatever reason, it seemed to scare Corzine enough that he backed off.
Well, right now he's running against Doug Christie. Both of them are charging each other with all sorts of corruption.
Well, that's right. In fact, a part of the new corruption that we have involves you folks with the Waterfront Commission of New York Harbor, which ironically came about because of an investigation of corruption 50 years ago, and that led to the book and the movie On the Waterfront. And one of the people that allegedly involved in that is a guy by the name of Michael Madonna, who was the New Jersey commissioner for the Waterfront Commission of New York Harbor. He is alleged to be involved in all sorts of corrupt activities, and it was Governor Corzine who named him to that post. In fact, Michael Madonna is a former head of the Policemen's Union here in New Jersey.
My guest is Bob Engel, Trenton Bureau Chief of Gannett Newspapers. He's written with Sandy McClure a book called The Soprano State, New Jersey's Culture of Corruption, updated with the latest scandals and published by St. Martin's Griffin. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Bob Engel, who's written with Sandy McClure, The Soprano State, New Jersey's Culture of Corruption, published by St. Martin's Griffin, and now available in paperback. A couple of listeners, Bob, have pointed out that New York State has had its share of corrupt, shady politicians, Pedro Espada, and there's a new scandal involving him and his son, Joe Bruno, Hiram Montserrat, Charlie Rangel, and we probably could go on. But it is interesting that New Jersey, almost everybody is touched at one time or another. Jim Florio, we mentioned, mm-hmm. was connected to a scandal involving nursing homes.
Right.
What about Christie Todd Whitman? It seems, at least in her case, abuses were more by her aides, and her major scandal probably occurred involving the 9/11 cleanup when she was working in the Bush administration.
When she said that the air around lower Manhattan was perfectly safe to breathe. In her administration, speaking of EasyPass, they hired two politically connected companies to install EasyPass, so the reader that is above your car when you go through, and the device on the inside of the car were made by two different companies, and so the reader wouldn't talk to the thing overhead. So everybody in the rest of the states, Easy Pass worked. You just zoomed through. In New Jersey, it didn't work. And the other thing they did was the Parsons auto inspection system. Parsons gave a lot of money. They're from California. They gave a lot of money to the Republican Party, and so they wound up with this contract for auto inspection, and they designed it in such a way that the equipment didn't like the New Jersey winters. Well, if you're in Pasadena, California, maybe you don't understand the New Jersey winter, but anyway, that was messed up for a long time so badly that they had to shut it down and try to get it fixed.
Well, there was the car emissions fiasco involving Parsons Infrastructure, which the Corzine administration renewed their contract in 2007.
They did indeed. Yes, they gave them another lease on life, and the part of the problem was they had been doing it, and if somebody else came in and do it and did it, there would be a learning curve and all of that. So as far as anyone can tell, it seems to be working okay now. Although I would argue that they're spending way too much money for auto inspections and not getting enough return for the money that they're putting into. It used to be something like $40 million a year, something like that. And for the auto inspection, for the emissions part of it, yes, cars are getting cleaner and cleaner and cleaner, and we need that. But in terms of mechanical failures that cause accidents in passenger cars, it's less than 0.1%. So I don't really think you're getting the bang for the money there.
Now, in other states, we have also seen accusations of illicit affairs. That is something that John Corzine had to deal with. But he, in the last campaign, he lucked out because his opponent also had it was revealed had an illicit affair.
Well, yeah, there were those allegations. The difference about Corzine, and once again, he does everything a little bigger than everybody else, is that he had this affair with a woman named Carla Katz, and she happened to be head of one of the biggest state employee unions, and they were going together, and for whatever reason that split up, and then they had a divorce. They were never married or anything like that, but they had a divorce lawyer sort of handle it, and she wound up with a condo, and she wound up with her house that she had been living paid for. She wound up with all of her kids being sent to private schools. Their education is paid for. And so everybody was saying, well, you know, we've all had relationships and when we were dating that broke up, but whoever paid their partner $5 million and gave them houses and all of that after it happened. And that never was fully explained. And then during contract negotiations, there were this series of emails between the governor and Carla Katz, who at that point was heading the union. She has since been removed from that job. And she said it involved union business. He said it didn't. And the news media and others tried to get their hands on the emails. And finally, the administration won a court battle that said that it could be kept secret. But there's been a lot of things that just didn't make sense on any level that the average person operates on.
And then he's made several publicized slurs against Italian Americans.
Well, I think in those cases, I think the man honestly thought it was funny. And he was joking. His sense of humor is not the best. And I think he's a little uncomfortable in that situation, but I think he was trying. Well, because when you run for office, you want to be liked.
Well, how accurate is the state's image as a base for the mob? Is it really the Soprano state?
It really is the Soprano state. And that's why we call it that for two reasons, because the mob is here and working, and because the government treats taxpayers like the mob treats its victims. But there are some examples in the Soprano state. There is this whole, when they decided to legalize gaming in Atlantic City, Brendan Byrne was the governor in those days, and he stood there and said to the mob, keep your filthy hands off of Atlantic City. And that was a great photo op, and he got quoted widely. But what we found when we were researching the Soprano state is that this commission set up to keep the mob out of Atlantic City wasn't working. There was a very well-known construction company that had been banned from doing any business in New York because of mob ties. The commission in New Jersey just couldn't find that there were any. All I had to do was read the New York report, but they turned the other way and pretended that it just didn't exist. And then finally they were banned because it became so embarrassing.
Is that why the mob continues to thrive in New Jersey, because people do look the other way?
I think there's too much looking the other way, and I think that's why we have the mob in New Jersey.
What is the SCI, and why did Governor Whitman hamstring its activities?
Well, that's a good question. The SCI, the State Investigation Unit, it was an independent unit whose job it was to go out and originally it was mob investigations, but they spread out and they did other things, and it does excellent work. If I had to choose one state agency that really deserves its money, it would be the SCI. And in the old days, they had subpoena power and all of that. Then when Whitman came in, she pulled her teeth. They can still do investigations, but they have no subpoena power. All they can do is refer things to the Attorney General's office. Now, the Attorney General's office in New Jersey in recent years has had, starting with actually Whitman, has had the reputation of looking the other way and sweeping the white-collar crime under the carpet while it deals with low-hanging fruit of, you know, state employees stealing gasoline for their personal car, or maybe the fees that people are paying on movie rentals, or there was a campus gossip column thing they were investigating, and it's all really minor, trivial stuff. Or they'll get really excited about the click it or ticket seatbelt campaign, where they issued 44,000 citations, and then they vowed to come back next year and try to do more. So it's really kind of silly stuff when you look at what the federal government is doing, like this roundup that we just have, and then compare them to the Attorney General's office. And I thought it was interesting that the Attorney General found out when the head of the FBI called her the day the roundup had started. They weren't trusted enough to be included in the investigation.
My guest is Bob Engel, Trenton Bureau Chief of Gannett Newspapers. He's written with Sandy McClure a book called The Soprano State, New Jersey's Culture of Corruption. It is published by St. Martin's Griffin. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, they don't trust basic parts of the government. What about judges and prosecutors?
We have one of my favorite chapters in The Soprano State is about judges and lawyers and law enforcement. And there are parts of it that are just as corrupt as the rest of it. And some of the people who make their way into positions of responsibility, one of my mother's favorite story in the whole book, and my mother does not live in New Jersey. She's one of those people that think it's one of the funniest things you've read all year, because she doesn't live here. But there was a judge, a female, who was charged with shoplifting two watches from a department store. So she went to trial, and she claimed diminished capacity because her toilet wouldn't stop flushing.
Is this Rosemary Williams?
I don't have it in front of me right now, so I can't tell you for sure. I would hate to misinform you. I can't. There's so many judge stories in the book, I'm not sure which one is her. But she was returned to the bench.
Another judge was involved in a sex tape made with a Russian teenage boy.
and that was a male judge, and he was actually sentenced to prison, but he had gone out of state for those activities, and that's another one of the stories in The Soprano State. Sometimes it makes you wonder if there are any qualifications for being judges at all.
Actually, Williams was caught driving drunk. She also had a fight with her boyfriend, leading to a suspension. There have been a number of judges who have been caught. I've heard that Casa Nostra members love the HBO show The Sopranos for glorifying their lifestyles, and the De Gabacanti family was actually caught on tape comparing themselves to the TV family.
We have that in the Soprano state. Actually, we do. they were sure that it was based on them. And
what,
they were kind of happy.
Are they the largest Cosa Nostra family in New Jersey?
I really can't tell you who is now. When we did the research on that part of it about 2 years ago, and I don't know what the current standing is now. We did find something that I didn't know prior to that, but the history of Atlantic City as being a mob resort. There was around the turn of the last century, turn of the 20th century, a mob convention in Atlantic City. And, you know, people like Al Capone and all those guys were there. And I just couldn't get out of my head the image of, you know how it is when you go to these conventions, you have these stickers they put on your shirt that says, "Hello, I'm Bob." I can't get out of my mind the image of Al Capone walking around with a big cigar and one of these signs that says, "Hello, I'm Al." But there in the book, there's some original reporting that had never been published before the Soprano state came out that Sandy McClure did. She talked to the person who was in charge of bringing the mob to Atlantic City. And the bottom line of the story was the New York mob was very interested, and they initiated it. And then the Philadelphia mob found out that they were into it, and they thought, well, heck, you know, we're closer to Atlantic City. It ought to be ours. And what happened was, by the time Brendan Byrne stood up there and told the mob to keep its filthy hands out of Atlantic City, they were already there and operating.
Do you have any words of encouragement for our listeners in New Jersey?
I do. Get out there, get informed, and vote. This situation can be turned around by changing some laws, by tightening some other laws, and all you need is a willing legislature. This report that you referred to earlier said for the first time in a while, the voters are starting to think that maybe the Republicans would do a better job of running the state. If you've been voting for the same person over and over and over again, and you don't get a different result, then that should be telling you something. Maybe it's time we change some of the lawmakers down here, and they get serious about changing the laws.
Yeah, but your book reveals that corruption is nonpartisan in New Jersey.
Oh,
you have a fair
right.
number of Republicans who've been caught as well as the Democrats.
You're absolutely right about that. The public perception now is the Republicans would do a better job. But over the years, if you look at it, it's been on both sides of the aisle. If you voted against the incumbents and you got a new bunch in, and if they started down the same track and you voted them out in 2 years, maybe by the next time you get people who understand that they work for the public, not the other way around. This whole system is designed for them. The pension system, the whole thing is designed for them. If you can get that changed, then you can get this state cleaned up.
But look at Andrew Consovoy. People are getting away with corruption in the courts. Can elections change that?
Well, you've got to start somewhere. And I think you, because, you know, it's all over. I think you need to get the government here in Trenton all on the same track, all determined to change things and do something about it before it goes downhill. But you got to start somewhere, and I say start at the ballot box.
I'm talking with Bob Engle, whose book with Sandy McClure, The Soprano State, was a New York Times bestseller, now updated with the latest scandals, and published in paperback by St. Martin's Griffin. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, sir.